The following is an analysis, interpretation, and summary of James Clear's book, Atomic Habits. Chapter 17, Accountability Partners. So in the last chapter of Atomic Habits, we talked about one of my favorite and most important rules and chapters in this book, and that's how to stick with a good habit every day by measuring and monitoring our outcomes that are important to us. And we went through numerous strategies and psychological advantages to measuring and monitoring habits. Highly recommend going back if you haven't seen that. But now we're going to talk about accountability partners and how valuable having someone or a system to be accountable to can be to establishing and creating and maintaining a habit that's important to you. But before we begin, we're going to start with a story about the president having to kill somebody. So this is a short, brief article on preventing nuclear war from the March 1981 issue of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. An early arms control proposal dealt with the problem of distancing the president would have in the circumstances facing a decision about nuclear war. There is a young man, probably a naval officer, who accompanies the president. This young man has a black attache case with contains the codes that are needed to fire nuclear weapons. I could see the president at a staff meeting considering nuclear war as an abstract concept and question. He might conclude, the decision is affirmative. We're going to do it. My suggestion would be quite simple. Put that needed code number in a little capsule and then implant that capsule right next to the heart of a volunteer. The volunteer would carry with him a big, heavy butcher knife as he accompanied the president. If the president ever wanted to fire nuclear weapons, the only way he could do so would be for him first with his own hands to kill one human being. The president says, George, I'm sorry, but tens of millions must die. He has to look at someone in their eyes and realize what death is, what innocent death is, blood on the White House carpet. It's a reality brought home. So this is an example of having a system to be accountable for, because we look at, you know, this, what do they call it? The football, nuclear football, I believe they call it. This guy with the suitcase who walks around all the time with the president, just like in the next room or just and at a moment's notice, the codes to launch the nuclear missiles. Well, we disconnected from the outcome and consequences of what that actually could be. Killing millions, tens of millions, and laying waste to in the megafauna, an entire piece of land. And so this is kind of like this idea that, okay, to take a life, you should take a life. Because your hands are bloody, but they're not really bloody. So because accountability partners create an immediate cost to inaction by creating a social cost to poor behavior. Let me repeat that. Accountability partners create an immediate cost to inaction, because if you don't do the action, the person or system you're accountable for, there are consequences. And it could be disappointment. Oh, you didn't turn up, man. You said you were going to come. We made a plan. When you're going to perform an action or behavior, more likely to do it if you have someone to be accountable to. You're meeting somebody there. You're training with somebody. You're preparing for the marathon with a group of people, with a person. Now, if you don't turn up, there's a social cost to your poor behavior. And the more immediate the pain, the less likely the behavior. And that's the pain of like having to kill somebody before you hit the nuclear button is an immediate visceral pain. If you want to prevent bad habits and eliminate unhealthy habits, adding an instant cost to the action is a great way to reduce the odds. So if you do X, and this actually exists, there is, Tim Ferriss has talked about, if you don't do X behavior, or if you do X behavior, then you donate automatically $100 to not your favorite charity, the worst charity that you could think of. All right, you're going to donate to the meat and dairy industry, if you don't do X and Y behavior. It could be the opposite way if you're an omnivorous or carnivore-based eater. And there's numerous examples of this. You're donating, it's an immediate cost, it's an immediate kind of feeling of dissuasion. We repeat bad habits because they serve us in some way. We have to remember that bad habits are—they have a purpose. They're giving us something, and that makes them hard to abandon. But the best way to overcome this is to increase the speed and proximity of the punishment as close to the behavior as possible. There can't be a gap between the action and the consequence. This is really important. This is classic operant conditioning, psychological conditioning. Okay, we want the reinforcement to be as close as possible to the behavior. As soon as the action occurs, the immediate consequence behaviors begin to change much more effectively. You need to make the association, whether you realize it or not, there is an association being made between the action, or sorry, the consequence and the behavior. And if you leave them far apart, then the neural wiring and associations won't occur anywhere near as effectively, if at all. So whether you have a child and you want to teach them the consequences of poor behavior, if you teach those consequences after the day is done, let's say that the poor behavior is exerted, all right, there is, you hit somebody, your kid hit somebody, or they're being violent, they're verbally abusive for the first time, and this is like, whoa, what's happening? Where are they learning this? The consequence needs to be very, very immediate, close proximity for them to learn and associate those behaviors. This is particularly important in children because you can't always articulate the rationale and logic of why behaviors are dangerous or to yourself or to your environment or to other people. Or just they're not behaviors that will align with the social cohesion of the community you're around. So if you can put that punishment or the negative reinforcement or even positive reinforcement, really important, close as proximity to the good behavior. If somebody has done a good behavior, we need want to keep it as close as possible. But another thing we get from this psychological conditioning is that interspersing, not having always consistent positive reinforcement every single time. Pavlovian, if you look up Pavlov's dog, you kind of see this, the dog salivating before he's going to eat in the anticipation of food. But to maintain most effective learning, we've learned that we don't want to enforce positive reinforcement every single time. You want to have a bit of anticipation of like, oh, is it going to come now? You want to create a bit of a mystery of when the positive reinforcement is going to occur. So meaning, practically, not having that positive reinforcement every single time the good behavior is had. You might have it for the first couple, but then you don't do it for the next one or the next one after. And then you do it for the next one after that. And so there are reasons why that is particularly beneficial. You can look up it yourself, but I'm just summarizing the outcome. So now we need to think about how we can adjust our own behaviors by having our behaviors of people around us by having the punishment and reward very close proximity. A late fee triggers customers to pay their bills on time, as an example. But even then, you could argue it was not close enough because you might get the bill a week later. People will jump through hoops to avoid immediate pain. If you're going to use punishment to change behavior, then the strength of the punishment must match the relative strength of the behavior it's trying to correct, and it's reliably, consistently enforced. So it needs to be reliably and consistently enforced, and the relative strength of the behavior and consequence needs to match the punishment. So we can't be like, we don't want to be too disproportionate. Otherwise, you can create all types of havoc behaviorally and really distance. Like if your punishment is so disproportionate, you won't do anything. You know, if your late fee for a credit card is so big, I'm just canceling this card. I'm going to cancel this gym membership. The cost of procrastination must be greater than the cost of action. So if you're the person who procrastinates a lot, how can we think about creating a system in place where your procrastination is punished just slightly more than the cost of action? The cost of laziness must be greater than the cost of exercise, for example. Getting fined for not recycling or smoking in a public place is an example. And I think about this for speeding tickets. It's a very visceral response when you get the speeding ticket after you've been pulled over immediately, but not so much a week, 2-3 weeks later when you get it in the mail, because you see now this is, if only we understood, if only we had, like, so many people speed. And yet, like, the problem about consequences being so far apart is that we're not going to learn the behavior. people often go back to speeding. It's kind of ingrained in maybe their character or their disposition, or this like you have to like change quite a bit about yourself if you're the type of person that speeds a lot. That's not just the outcome is speeding, but you're the type of person that speeds. You're the type of person who's probably maybe makes rash decisions or is more risk prone. Maybe you're the type of person who rushes a lot. And you're very time pressed and time poor, and so you're just trying to get from A to B as quick as possible. Maybe you're A-type personality. So these are the underlying pillars behind the outcome of speeding a lot. So the same thing can be said for the outcome is you're littering. But the value is there's no connection to your environment or to the world, or it's very self-orientated. The outcome is smoking, but maybe there's a disconnect between how that affects you, your family, your health. So if there is a way we could connect speeding or these deleterious behaviors that can have really dangerous consequences, if there was a way, like any, I even think about it the other way. What if people got positively reinforced for having a clean track record with monetary value? I think this is an interesting thing. I wonder if it's being executed anywhere. So what if you got positively reinforced for 6 months of 12 months of no speeding fines? And that stacks and compounds. Every 6 months, it increases. And you have this anticipatory effect, like of, ooh, if I do X behavior, I'm going to get Y reward, and it's in the future, yes, but I have to have my present actions have to be better, or have to maintain my present positive actions in order to get Y future reward. And this talks about previous habit modification strategies that we've talked about in previous chapters. And I wonder, if we if we didn't just looked at negative reinforcement, but we also looked at positive reinforcement to incentivize positive behavior, even in the immediate, if police officers were rewarding positive behavior instead of always, if we had a law system that rewarded positive behavior, not just negative, and not just willy-nilly, but be really specific about what type of positive behavior that we're going to reinforce, particularly high stakes behavior, which is dangerous driving. Maybe it could be alcohol abuse, drug abuse. If we could look to incentivize positive behavior, maybe we could have more of a positive impact on a totality of a population. But we can at least affect ourselves, right? So we can at least use this information for ourselves and how we can make the cost of laziness, the cost of procrastination, greater. So maybe if you catch yourself every day, like you procrastinate and you don't do the thing you say you're going to do, you transfer $50 from your account and you give it away, or like there's some type of outcome. Like this is where you guys have to do a little bit of work. I can't come up with every single strategy here. Like you have to do a little bit of work here and sit down and think about it for a second and figure out how you can come up with the strategy to incentivize or to de-incentivize your procrastination. And here's one to finish off. Create a habit contract. Laws and regulations are an example of creating social contracts to a society who collectively adhere to certain rules. And if you don't, you'll be punished. Seatbelt rules, recycling laws, particularly in Vancouver, which have very stringent recycling laws, which I appreciate and actually like, because now there's a cost associated with not recycling your waste correctly. I believe you could be fined, if I recall correctly from my time there. Anyway, we have curfews, masks. I don't know if I've written this. Actually, I would have. That's very relevant to now. Laws and regulations are creating social contracts. There's been a lot of parts of the world where we've had curfews and social contracts to wearing masks and having curfews of being out at a certain time. And this habit contract is a verbal written agreement which state a commitment to a particular habit, and a punishment will occur if you don't follow through. Now, you could execute this through just one or two people who act as your accountability partner. This is where accountability partners come in. They can help assist you in creating the system and the habit contract. So you don't have to necessarily enforce it yourself. You can allow a friend, a family member, a partner to, hey, if I don't do this, can you do this for me? And it's as simple as you know, every time you don't do X behavior, I take a piece of clothing from your closet and I put it away somewhere you can't see it. Or I take a piece of food from your the pantry, and now you don't get to enjoy it. Now you have a habit contract. E.g., if you don't do X behavior, then this app, because there are apps that do this as well, you can look them up, or person will donate to a charity, anti-abortion, vegan, communist party, you know, pick your example. I will give you $100 every time I don't do X behavior. Every time I don't train, here's $100. Every time I do train, maybe you get half of it back. Important note. Physically make a contract where you sign off and hold yourself accountable to solidify some real stakes. Tim Ferriss talks about this, and like they were actually putting it into a physical contract. And James Clear has actually already done this. He has created a Atomic Habits contract resource. If you just look up, I believe it's atomichabits.com/contract, or you can just Google it and you should be able to see a resource that, yes, there it is, that you can download and you can sign it off. James has already done the work for us. Like, let's execute it. It's here. And why it works? Well, we care about being perceived as untrustworthy or lazy. So having an accountability partner helps us adhere to our positive social behavioral perceptions. Now, again, let's think about how we can tie this into identity. What values and identity axioms are important to you, to me? Well, independence, like what's important? Trustworthiness, capability, assertiveness. Like, if you tie this into your contract and tie it into the behavior, then you're much more likely to do it or not do it, depending on the behavior. We want to present our best selves, and we care about the perceptions of others for social cohesion and survival, of staying in the tribe. That's why this technique works so well, because we're tapping into this primitive care of perception. And this makes your habits painful in the moment if you don't do it. And so that summarizes how we can use habit contracts with other accountability partners to hold ourselves accountable. We talked about numerous strategies to giving examples of how we can do that, but also not to neglect that using accountability partners for good habits, for positive habits, you know, training with people, joining people together on a business venture instead of doing it all on our own, doing a podcast with somebody. You're accountable to do the behavior with somebody. If you want to hold yourself accountable to fostering healthier relationships with people, with your partner, for example, maybe you can do more of the tasks you do alone with them. Every time we grocery shop, we're going to go together. This is time like we can just share a little bit of moments together. I mean, even something as mundane as grocery shopping, or every time I go for a walk, I am talking to you. Hey, let's go together. You know, there's numerous examples of how we can use accountability partners to benefit not only ourselves, but our relationships with people. And so that summarizes chapter 17, accountability partners. And in the next chapter, we will talk about the truth about talent. So that concludes chapter 17. If you guys want to see all of these videos and stay up to date on them and not miss them, if you take value from them, subscribe, hit the notification so you can know when they're up. You can hit subscribe to my newsletter as well. Below, all links in the description, at Alexander Emmanuel. If you want to follow me on social media, stay up to date on all the philosophical, psychological ramblings and thoughts that I have and quotes that I share and different ideas that I share that are curious to me. Otherwise, thank you for watching. You guys can see a whole variety of book summary analyses on this channel and all podcast platforms. This is about my fifth one, I believe. And we'll just keep going for as long as I keep reading and being obsessed about and chasing my curiosity about everything related to what it is to be a human being. Thanks for watching. I'll see you in the next one.